It is 9:15 and resuming the meeting. Ms. Johnson, I believe you are present.
Yes, I am here.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Corn.
Okay. this is an informal hearing. Case number 20-43. Let's start by having all, this is a little bit more formal than what we've done so far today. Let's have all the board members, staff, council introduce themselves.
So Dr. Cornwell, I'm sorry, Dr. Cornwell, professional member.
Yes, here.
Mr. Clinton, public member.
Here.
Ms. Remick, professional member.
Present.
Dr. King, professional member.
Present.
Dr. Bustillo, professional member.
Present.
Mr. Greer, public member.
I'm here.
Ms. Cardoza, staff.
Present.
Ms. Crowley, staff.
Here.
Ms. Chepius, staff.
Here.
Ms. Richardson, investigator.
Present.
And Mr. Harris, assistant attorney general.
Here.
Thank you, guys.
Would the licensee please introduce themselves?
Yes, my name is Jessica Johnson, and I'm a physical therapist in Tempe, Arizona.
Just for our information, since we're virtual, do you have an attorney or counsel with you today?
No.
Okay. Is there anyone else that you anticipate calling and speaking in your behalf?
No.
Okay. All right. This interview is being held pursuant to ARS 32-2046, and I have a script that I need to read first before we get going. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board's statutes or rules has occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any or all of the following disciplinary action. 1, issue a decree of censure. 2, place restrictions upon a licensee's practice. 3, issue a civil penalty of not more than $500. 4, issue other disciplinary action. 5, issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of continuing education as specified by the board. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rules is not sufficiently serious to warrant disciplinary action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board's statutes and rules, the board may dismiss the case. If the board finds that the violations warrant suspension or revocation of the license, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. Okay, so let's have a brief overview.
Can you swear in the witnesses first, Dr. Cornwell?
Okay, so all those who plan to speak, so Jessica,
that would be myself and Ms. Johnson.
Okay, so Ms. Donahue and Ms. Johnson, would you please raise your right hand? Do you swear to tell the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
Ms. Johnson?
Yes, I do.
And Ms. Donahue? Yes, I do.
Okay, thank you. All right. so let's see. Let's have a brief overview.
So this is complaint 2043. Ms. Johnson failed to renew her license on or before August 31st, 2020. Ms. Johnson's license was reinstated on November 9th, 2020. Ms. Johnson worked 39 days without a license.
All right, thank you. Ms. Johnson, if you would like to, you may make an opening statement.
Don't have anything really prepared, but it was on me. It's my mistake. At the time, I wasn't quite working my full hours. I mean, we all went through COVID, so I don't want to be ignorant and say that's an excuse by any means. It was just kind of a dumpster fire, and I let that slip.
Okay. Would you be willing to answer questions if members of the board have them for you?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, does any board member have any questions for Ms. Johnson?
I did, just really quick.
Ms. Johnson, how many times before this year had you renewed your license on the every other year schedule?
Never. This is my third year being a physical therapist, so that was my first time.
And did you receive email notifications that it was time to renew?
No, I did not.
Are you aware, I mean, do you suspect that the email that we have on file is your most current email?
Yes, currently. At the time when I remembered, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to renew this. The contact that I had to do had to change the email. And so we reached out from a different contact. I went through my spam in my inbox and archives, and I just to make sure I didn't receive something, and I haven't until I got my email changed.
Thank you.
So when you applied for your initial license, you provided an email, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And was that the correct email?
No, I no longer have access to that email.
So were you aware that you needed to change that as soon as you changed your email?
I changed it through the APTA and with my work and everything else that comes associated with that. But I don't remember if that was off my checklist of the other things I needed to update. I thought it's grouped into one again. It's not an excuse. I understand I should have called or made a point to double check, but...
Were you working alone, or were you the only therapist?
There's only one other full-time therapist here.
Okay. And so they didn't mention that they had to renew their license, and nothing triggered your memory, or?
No one was here, so I guess I was at the time physically working alone just due to COVID restrictions. And so I had really no communication other than, you know, mentoring each other and going over case discussions and whatnot via Zoom and other things.
When you attended school and graduated, were you aware of the cycle for renewal and what and when things were due?
Oh, I'm sure my school was very thorough and clear on that. Whether I remembered it or not, maybe the problem, but I'm sure that I was aware or taught that, yes.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions?
Ms. Johnson, this is Ms. Remick. Would you say that your current email address, place of employment, and contact information is current with the board?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I have a question for Dr. Donahue.
Go ahead.
Did the board send a reminder email to Ms. Johnson?
We would have sent a reminder email every month from, at least three reminder emails, but we can only use, obviously, the email we have on file.
And that's my next question. And those emails were sent to the email address
that was on file at the time of her renewal. When Ms. Johnson reinstated, she updated her information.
I have a question for Ms. Johnson. The information we have is that you practiced for 39 days. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
How did you figure that out?
It's a great question.
How did we figure it out? We took the date that it expired and added the days to the date that she reinstated. There are 39 days in between there.
I don't think so. Because it was
from August 31st to November 9th?
Yeah. Are you just counting?
August 31st to the November 9th.
Are you counting all days or just work days?
All days. She was a licensed physical therapist that was able to practice for 39 days.
So that should be 69 days.
Yeah. September through November 9th.
Yeah, you're missing October, Karen. It's probably 70, actually.
You are correct. I'm sorry, Mr. Greer. Thank you for your math. I apologize. That is correct. That is my math error. I'm very sorry.
And you back to Ms. Johnson. Do you know of those 70 days, how many days you practiced?
I could find that out. At the time, I wasn't quite working. I wasn't furloughed technically. I could absolutely find out that information.
And I'm just asking you for your best estimate. Were you working 5 days a week during that time? Were you working one day a week during that time?
Yeah, so during that time, probably twice a week.
Twice a week?
Maybe a few hours or so. And then it started to pick back up and started becoming more regular. Not regular hours, just regular days I would have to come in. And I work 4 days a week.
So, and I'm not trying to hold you to this. I'm just trying to get your best
information
to make sure I understand what you're saying. Is at the beginning, so it probably in September, you were working 2 days a week. And then as you went into October, November, it was closer to 4 days a week.
Yes, okay. I think so. For sure. I got back up to the four times, which I work standard. Now, like that's what I work. I work the 40 hours in 4 days.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, any other questions? It appears that you didn't communicate with anyone at the board office until you received the complaint. Or even after you received this notice of complaint, is there a reason why you didn't contact the board?
When I received the email, I contacted them to my memory that day, like as soon as I had it. It was like panic mode.
Are you talking about reinstatement, Dr. Cornwell? So yeah. she would have received notice that her license have been placed on administrative suspension. So it's not until she reinstated that the complaint was open.
Okay.
Thank you, Karen.
Sure.
I do have a question.
Go ahead.
How did I receive the email? How did it change?
How
to
did
get
what?
To me to know about that I didn't reinstate it?
We probably would have used your address and sent it by letter. You probably received it by mail.
It was an email.
We would have only used the email on file.
Okay.
So if you didn't change it, it was the old email.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't change it, but I went through all my spam and everything. I never received. Again, it's not
right.
By any means, I don't want you to take it that way. Sure. It's not a responsibility.
Yeah,
I was just curious of how I.
It's a bulk email send, so I can't delete any particular person out or add any particular person in.
Okay, thank you.
Did we communicate with her by mail as well?
I can look and see what we did.
The first letter I got was about this hearing, which was about.
Yes.
3 weeks ago?
It's not the first letter you received. So, gotta pull up your.
That would have been April 5th, 2021. And that went came certified.
Yes, that's the mail I remember getting.
Yeah.
Right.
Ms. Johnson, did you receive any communications from the board prior to that April 5th, 2021, regarding a consent agreement?
No. From mail, no. That's the very first mail that I got sent to the clinic.
Any emails from us after? Because we discussed this, I think, at our February board meeting, right, Karen?
Yeah, I can double check the certified mail if you give me a minute on the consent agreement. It went to the exact same address, but I'll have to check the tracking to see if it was received.
Okay. Ms. Johnson, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about the situation?
No, I appreciate the opportunity, but nothing that I think would change my situation here.
Karen, any luck?
Yeah, I'm getting there. It's not as fast as you think.
I'm just making sure you're still looking and we're not waiting for something that's not coming.
Still coming. I do have it delivered, but not left with an individual. So there is a potential that Ms. Johnson did not receive it.
And it wasn't signed, though?
I do not have green cards here to check a signature at this point.
Okay. I don't have any other questions, Chairman.
Okay. Does anyone else have any questions? Okay. Ms. Johnson, would you... We're pretty much done since nobody else seems to have any questions. Do you want to make any last statement?
Other than I sincerely do apologize for my lack of action and really preparation, because that's what should have and would have saved this whole situation from unfolding. And I apologize. I mean no harm to, of course, my patients and disrespect to the board. And it will never happen again. I can assure you that. Oh my goodness.
All right. Do we have any discussion or do I have a motion?
I have a motion to find the following findings of facts. The respondent knew or should have known that she was required to renew her license on or before August 31st, 2020. The respondent failed to renew her license on or before August 31, 2020. Respondent reinstated her license on November 9th, 2020, and that she practiced 70 days without an active license. I would also move that we find these facts result in support the following conclusion of law, that this constitutes a violation of ARS 32-2027A. That would be my combined motion for findings of facts and conclusions of law. Is that okay, Mark?
Yeah, to me it is.
Now the other Mark.
It is, Mr. Greer, thank you.
Is there a second?
Second, Bustillo.
So it's been moved and seconded for findings of facts and conclusions of law. You're in discussion.
All right, any discussion on the current motion? All right, then I'll call this question.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the findings of facts, conclusions of law, as indicated in the informal hearing brief. Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
You are now at your order. Motion passes.
I would move that we issue discipline in a 90 days probation with an early termination option, a $460 civil penalty, require the respondent to retake the jurisprudence exam, require the respondent to provide notice to her employer, payers, and patients, and have her take the ethics course. Or Anna.
How many hours for this ethics part?
6 hours can be completed online.
Okay, and I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I would note that this is consistent with the disciplinary matrix unlawful practice cases dated 2019.
And who seconded?
Bustillo.
I'm sorry, who was it, Karen?
Bustillo.
Thank you. So it's been moved and seconded, just to re-clarify, that Ms. Johnson be placed on 90 days probation, pay a $460 civil penalty, pass the Arizona law exam, give a notice to payers, patients, and employers, and take and complete 6 hours of ethics, which can be performed online. Early termination available?
Yes.
You're in discussion.
All right. So we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on that?
Is that for me? Everyone's saying happy.
No, no.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay. I got nervous.
No, and just discussion by board members on the motion before we take a vote. Hearing none, let's call the question then.
The motion before you for complaint 2043, Ms. Jessica Johnson, physical therapist, is to issue a board order for 90 days of probation, require a $460 civil penalty, successful passage of the AZ law exam, notice to payer, patients, and employers, and 6 hours of ethics, which can be completed online with early termination possible. Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Ms. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
So, Ms. Johnson, I will be sending you something by email and by certified mail for the board order, okay?
All right. Thank you, guys. I apologize.
All right. Thank you for attending.
Of course.
All right. Let's go to item 4B, case number 20-21-06, Allison Slobin.
I believe Ms. Slobin is present. Ms. Slobin, are you present? I did see her come on at one point.
I'm here.
There you go. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this is complaint 2106. Ms. Slobin obtained her compact privilege number 04329T on 2/1/21 prior to passing the Arizona law exam on 2/14/21. This case is for your review.
Okay. And this is this is an initial review. So Ms. Slobin, do you have anything you'd like to say before we might have some questions for you?
Absolutely. I did submit a letter of explanation, which I hope that you have in your presence. If you don't, I can read from that to kind of let you know what my line of thought was, with that occurrence.
They have the letter that you sent.
Perfect. Just so for the highlights of that in general, I think that this was just a basic misunderstanding in the process. And as the PT compact is relatively new, I would say for all of us, specifically me, I had gone through the compact and in the standard fashion 1 year prior when I had started a new job and became compact licensed in many of the states that were offering it at the time. And I think there was just a misunderstanding of the timing and perhaps the specific wording in keeping up with the multitude of states that I've
Because there are you applied to multiple states, doesn't that kind of underscore the idea that why we want people to pass the jurisprudence exam before they get the privilege so that they know exactly what to do in Arizona?
Yes, absolutely. And I did do that in the year before that. So for 2020, that was the first year that I was licensed and applied, and this was for 2021. And so with that understanding, I had already passed the jurisprudence. In my home state of North Carolina, the way that the jurisprudence works here, and so I'm always referring to the home state because my understanding at the beginning was that your home state and your home state licensure is basically what dictates a majority of the way that you reapply for your license. And so I did follow that. And with us, our jurisprudence is performed in a 2-year reporting period, similar to our continuing education requirements. And it is noted that I do take jurisprudence actually every year from North Carolina. So I'm kind of always ahead 1 year in that regard. So yes, I was following that guideline.
And just to be clear, Ms. Slobin has only taken the AZ law exam jurisprudence, the Arizona jurisprudence, once.
Yes.
Okay. So when you saw the screen that said, be aware that jurisprudence must be completed before continuing with this purchase, you interpreted that I passed it in the past, and so it's still effective?
That's correct.
And just for clarification, you passed it in your home state, not for Arizona.
Oh, no, I passed for the first time that I applied for it. I passed in Arizona.
Yes, but that was after you received the compact privilege.
For which year?
I only have you taking the exam once for Arizona jurisprudence exam. Do you believe you have taken it twice?
No, I do not believe it. But so then how long is it good for?
It's good until you have to renew it with the compact privilege.
Okay, and with the compact privilege, and I'm asking this just for clarification because this was also in my letter, so it's very helpful. So then when you do it for the compact privilege, are you reapplying every year or are you renewing?
You are getting a new compact privilege every time it expires. Every time it expires, you need to take the Arizona law exam prior to attainment of that compact privilege.
Okay, understood. And you know, as I had done more investigation, you know, afterwards, after I had received this, I do come to understand that now, at the time though, I had assumed that my 2020 privilege would have been good until, you know, the next time that I had to up it. And if that's incorrect, you know, thank you. But now I do understand it.
Do you believe you've had two privileges for the state of Arizona?
Well, no, I would assume that I just have one if the 2021 is in question.
So I'm looking at your FSVPT. You have taken the Arizona law exam on 2/14/20.
Correct.
Does that sound right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And the only compact for Arizona that I have for you is and I would show expired once it was there, is the one that you obtained on 2/1/2021. Is that correct?
Yes. I had one prior to that when I took the exam in 2020.
I do not have any record of you obtaining a compact privilege prior to February 1st, 2021.
Okay.
For the state of Arizona.
Yes, ma'am. And so then, yes, I have. And so I will find that documentation for you.
Okay. I have in 2020 that you had compact privileges in North Dakota, Oklahoma, Oregon, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Virginia, and Washington, but not Arizona.
Okay. I can find that for you.
Okay. Oh, no, I take it back. It is not in order. You did have a compact privilege in 20. You got a compact privilege in February 20th, 2020 and never took the exam.
That is incorrect. If I took the exam on 2/14/2020.
You took the exam? Yes, 2/14/2020.
Yes.
And then your 2020 Arizona, I gotta find it, it's not in order, hang on. You received your compact privilege. I gotta see these headings, you have so many. Issue date was on 2020. So that was correct. I apologize. I did not see it. And there is hundreds of compact privileges here. So I apologize. So Ms. Loban did take the law exam in 2020 when she received her first compact privilege. However, she did not retake it when she received her second compact privilege. Thank you.
A lot of dates.
Okay.
Ms. Loban, it's Kelly King. I'm just I'm just curious, what is your strategy in managing 38 different compact privileges?
My strategy is to go based on when my licensure for my state is due to renew in North Carolina. So for that, I go to I'm going to mess up the actual letters, but the FET. Okay. Yeah, you know, and so it shows you on file, you know, where you currently have a compact. Once you put in your renewal for your state, so let's say for this year, I always renew in December, although in North Carolina, it's not due until January 31st of the following year. I renew it early. And then what happens next is you get an email from the PT compact. We have been notified that you are renewed in your home state. It is time for you to renew. And so this is the first, this December, or this year is the first year that I'm doing that. So honestly, that's how I've been managing it.
Do you mind if I ask, and you're not obligated to answer, but what is your intent in practice and having so many compact privileges in so many states?
Absolutely. So I had started working for a company called Recovery One, and we're an all digital option. And basically my my responsibilities, I do admin and I do a variety of things. Right now, we don't offer full telehealth or anything like that. It's basically what's called a PT screen. So the original thought process was that for those people on the administrative staff of our company who are physical therapists, they should be licensed in the states where we may have clients. From a legal standpoint, just to do a screen, that's not necessarily required. If we were to go out and do more of a traditional PT model of fee-for-service or something like that via the telehealth realm, then that would change things. And that would change things regarding from state to state, your Medicare certification in each state, your direct access laws in each state, et cetera, and so forth, jurisprudence, and all of those things. So that was the rationale behind doing that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? A motion?
I'm going to move that we dismiss.
Is there a second? Hearing none, the motion fails.
I would move that we table this for 30 till the next meeting to give Ms. Slobin the opportunity to voluntarily surrender her Arizona compact privilege. If she fails to do so, I would bring this back for an informal hearing.
Second.
Do we have a motion with a second? Any discussion? Then let's call a question.
It's been moved and seconded to enable Ms. Slobin to request from the PT compact a voluntary surrender of her Arizona compact privilege and to provide a letter of surrender from the compact to us within 30 days or move to an informal hearing. Dr. Cornwall.
Yes.
Can we change that?
Sure.
Can we change that to a formal hearing? There's no reason to bring it back for an informal hearing.
Okay, to a formal hearing. Dr. King, do you agree?
Yes.
Thank you. So it'll be amended to a formal hearing. So again, the request will be for Ms. Slobin to request from the PT compact a voluntary surrender of her Arizona compact privilege and provide a letter of confirmation of that surrender within 30 days. Or this, or complaint at 2106 will be moved to a formal hearing. Dr. Cornwall.
Yes.
Mr. Clinton.
Yes.
Ms. Remick.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
No.
And Mr. Greer?
Yes.
The motion passes, and I'll get a letter to you, Ms. Slivlin, by mail and email, so be looking for it.
Yes, I have one quick question, please. If in the process of surrendering my PT Compact license, is that for the two-year time period, or is that indefinite?
You'll have to ask the Compact that question when you voluntarily surrender. I do not know that answer.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Next item on the agenda is case number 21-10. Lori Harper, physical therapist.
Ms. Harper declined her invitation this morning, so she is not present.
Okay.
So this is complaint 2110. Ms. Harper obtained her compact privilege number 04641T on 3/19/21 prior to passing the Arizona law exam on 5/7/21. I'm going to double check those dates just now that I know that there's a secret compartment for other dates real quick, but you may continue.
This is Mr. Greer. I would move that we table this matter for 30 days to allow Ms. Harper to voluntarily surrender her compact. And if she does not, I would invite her back for a formal hearing.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and we have a second. Discussion? This one, I'm getting tired of these. The previous case I'm okay with because this one is a little bit more concerning. And I feel like the compact has left us little or no options other than taking adverse action against those who find themselves getting a privilege without completing the jurisprudence exam. I'm reached the point where I think that's the only thing that we can really do that would get anyone's attention. I wish we could do it in a way that we didn't penalize the therapist so much, but I think that they're being lazy. I think they're ignoring things on the screen. I think that they're not taking it seriously. When the screen pops up and it says you must complete this before you proceed, then I'm even more concerned. We would never tolerate anything like this if someone knowingly said that they had completed their. Well, if they say that they complete their continuing education on renewal and we find out that they didn't because of an audit, we take action. We don't say, well, why don't you do such and such and we'll dismiss. We find them in violation and that's considered an adverse action. So I think we ought to be consistent, but I don't see any difference between this and continuing education on renewal.
The difference is we don't have the ability to do that with these licensees. The only thing we can do is take their compact privilege. And so going to your analogy, when someone misses a CE, we don't take their license away. Mm-hmm. And that's the equivalent of what we'd be doing. And so I get you. And I don't know if we're agendized for this, and Mark might jump out of his screen if I start talking about this, but I think it's time to change our notification on the compact from, hey, you guarantee this, that you do this, to you guarantee that you do this, and if you don't, we're going to remove your compact privilege and it's going to have this XYZ consequence. And I'm happy to put together some language that we can put on that box, but I agree. We've been more than patient, and the problem doesn't seem to be getting better.
Well, Josh, I think
Dr. Cornwell, if I could
already.
Dr. Cornwell, if I can interrupt you for a second, I think Mr. Harris might be able to shed some light on the options that the board may have. And Mr. Harris?
And then the only question before this, is this something we need to go into executive session for, Mark?
I'd appreciate that, Mr. Greer. Thank you.
I move to go into executive session to obtain legal advice.
Second.
So it's been moved and second to move into executive session. Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Pastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Okay, so remove yourself from this meeting and join the executive session meeting. I'm going to stop the recording and then join you.
It is 9:55.
Thank you.
Karen.
Yes.
I was just saying they're talking about verbiage. Josh is talking about